The latest from the world of technology. What's the right time to upgrade your computer? How long is too long to hang on to your smartphone? And are smartphones really worth $1,000? Speaking of spending a lot of money, just who is the target audience for Apple's latest and greatest desktop, the Mac Pro, the cheapest of which runs about $6,000? If you add a new Pro Display XDR monitor for another $5,000 and a $1,000 Pro stand, you can easily spend more on this computer than some people spend on a good used car. I'm Keith Shortall. Today, our tech team returns to answer your questions about home computing, smart tech, and all things Apple, Android, and beyond. What questions do you have? Main calling is next. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Tech aficionados, we gather here today to pay our respects to iTunes and note the impending birth of a new digital currency. I'm Keith Shortall, and today our tech team returns to share their thoughts about iTunes, to explain why Facebook wants to create its own cryptocurrency, and to answer your questions about the right time to upgrade your computer or your cell phone. Our team of tech experts consists of Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library, and Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology, and Andrew Rosenstein, owner of Techport. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the electronic devices in your life? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back, everybody.
Thank you.
Before we get to the big headlines of the tech world and start taking some calls from folks, I wanted to ask a personal question. Like, what sort of is the latest gadget, Jared, that you're playing with at home?
Well, we just had Father's Day, and I fall into that category. And you wake up, and sometimes there's a present there for you. So that was wonderful. This is a little limited probably in everyone listening. There's only so many of us with the golf addiction, but I'm a golfer and I love to get out there. And I was given the Arcos golf system. And for everyone understands the basics of golf, but long story short, you attach a sensor to every club. And then over time, they actually work with Microsoft, machine learning and essentially AI, artificial intelligence. And it starts to essentially build a database of the swings I take, where you start from, where you end from. It tracks and starts to build not only your round, but over time actually compiles those stats. And after you gather enough information, they have essentially a virtual caddy. I've never spent the money on a real caddy, so now I'll have a virtual one. And it will work on an Apple Watch or a phone. But essentially, it's just a tool out there. And you're seeing this across all types of different sports and hobbies and things. But the ability for machine learning and AI and database-driven things to essentially help you compile information, not only in business and things like that, but your personal life and fun things, and actually help you improve and get better and maybe actually enjoy yourself out there every once in a while.
So it tells you have a slice.
Yes, everybody tells me I have a slice. You don't need a machine for that.
Well, I hope it's well protected. You don't want that data in the wrong hands.
Well, no,
we'll all have slices.
Absolutely.
Janet, I know that you've had a big change in your life. Tell us about what's going on.
Yeah, well, I have a new house and I installed Google Wi-Fi in the house and it's really awesome. I have three different units, so I have great speedy coverage all over the place, and I get great reports. And every once in a while, Janet, here's an email. Everything in your Wi-Fi network is running great, and you have great speed. So that was fun to do it. And I also have a new app. I'm using the Amazon Prime Now for delivery from Whole Foods. I'm right on the edge of the delivery zone, so that's a kind of a dangerous app to have, but it was just really interesting to try it for the first couple of times.
Yeah, how did it work?
It's great. You have the app, you order stuff online. I kind of order a lot of the same things all the time, and they send it to some person who goes around and picks stuff, and if you know, they don't have the thing you want. They ask you about substituting, and then a van comes to your house and delivers it in a big bag, and you know, it's wonderful.
But
so
don't you miss the parking and the
lines? I still like going there, but when I don't want to deal with the parking and the lines, yeah. The app is great.
I think we'll be seeing more of these. I'm already hearing about them on the air. Andrew, what do you have going?
Oh, well, I'm into small things now. So I recently suffered something of a heartbreak of losing my AirPod first generation. And so I thought, oh, well, maybe it's not so bad. I'll go out and get the second generation of AirPods. You know what? I really miss the first generation because battery life is not what I thought it was going to be. The darn things fall out of your ears when you're running, and they're just too light. I mean, they don't have any heft. So I think I'm going to go back to eBay and look for a first-generation pair because there's something in the design that just doesn't have the convenience that the original AirPods came with.
I mean, this happens from time to time in tech,
does,
right? The assumption is the next thing's going to be better and oftentimes, yeah. it just isn't.
Newer right. is not always, you know. I always try and counsel people, don't be an early adopter, because let somebody else be the guinea pig for a while, mm-hmm. and read some reviews and see how people feel, because the newest iteration of whatever out is by no means make it automatically better.
Let's go to some of the headlines that we talked about here at the top. Facebook is launching a cryptocurrency as a kind of alternative to Bitcoin. Blockchain, all this is something that some of us actually, Jared's just really still don't completely understand yet. I'm trying to get my head around it. But explain kind of what Facebook is doing here and why it's a big deal.
Well, I could talk all hour about this. Facebook has created a consortium, which will be a neutral third party based out of Switzerland, made up of companies who essentially will be partners that will essentially run and be the backbone of this currency coming out with. This is in my opinion, it's not a competitor to a Bitcoin. It's a very different thing. This is, you know, if you think about the Bitcoins of the world and different cryptos as we've heard about them over years, it's supposed to be the paradise of the internet where there's no centralization. You're not beholden to a corporation or to a government or to a central bank or something like that. That's part of the reason why in 2011, after the financial crash, why cryptocurrencies in the form of Bitcoin were created. By who, we still have no idea. But it's out there. So what Facebook is doing is with these other larger companies, creating more of a virtual token. I think of it as more of a virtual token because it's going to be tied to still regular money. It's going to be backed by dollars and pesos and francs and yen. So it's unlike a Bitcoin, which is really not backed up by any other monetary value. The value that comes in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies comes from the technology and the trust that builds. Just like the same reason why we have faith in real money. I mean, if you really think about it, it's, and that's, I don't want to get too abstract, but it's people. If you, people say, "Well, why would you use a Bitcoin, or why is something like this important?" And I would say, "Well, why do we put value in gold? Why do we put value in that dollar bill that's in your pocket?" And there's things that have created value for us as humans over time, starting with gold and the simple fact that it was shiny and pliable and easier to move. So, as these things are growing, Facebook is getting in. And it allows them to get into this space. But I think what's great about it is whether they succeed or not or what they're doing, it's another step forward in these types of technologies. I really think of cryptocurrencies as a technological solution to many problems. And this is allowing them to get into the space, which allows us to be speaking about it and for Joe and Jane Public to get more and more used to the idea. Because if you think about it, 20 years ago, you could have never imagined how we would use the internet and cell phones the way we do now. And I think that virtual tokens and cryptocurrencies, you know, my daughter's 5. I don't think in 20 years she's going to move and spend money the way we do. So it's an interesting project they're doing. And I think it's good for everyone just that it helps us all become a little bit more comfortable with the concept.
But there are some who are not comfortable with the fact that Facebook is the entity that's launching this, given the ongoing concerns around data privacy and their sheer size and power. The company is saying that it's organized or set the system up to address some of those concerns, right? There's this, not running it directly.
We've heard that before.
They're in the data business, and we really can't. Yes, Facebook says the right things, but there are billions of dollars on the table here. And we can't, while they're using blockchain technology, which allows for encryption and privacy protection, it's not the same as Bitcoin. And as soon as this currency is used, as soon as Libra is in use, there will be data tracking mechanisms attached to it as well, because it's part of the Facebook universe.
But Facebook insists, by the way, that it will not use the information from the currency users to then post ads on their Facebook accounts.
But it is reportable to law enforcement, for instance, whereas Bitcoin is not, and other cryptocurrencies. So, of course, you don't want to get it. People use Bitcoin for reasons that, are against the law.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know that you're going to have somebody watching over your every transaction. And is this a legitimate transaction to a legal party? So it takes a lot of the anonymity out of a blockchain transaction.
Mm-hmm. And, there are people in Congress, Democrats, saying that we should not move forward with this kind of thing without Congress looking into what Facebook is trying to do. Others, presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren, calling for the breakup of the Facebooks. And is this an issue, do you think? I know this is probably not your realm, but politics, but in the world of tech, is this a growing issue? Like these are just too big, powerful.
Well, look at Apple is coming out with a credit card. Facebook has Libra. These entities are moving into the financial world in a pretty aggressive way, because there's a lot of money at stake, and most of these companies have reached a saturation point with their own advertising with Facebook, and as well as slowdown in product development with Apple. So they're looking for every possible avenue to create wealth.
The problem is Congress isn't really the most tech-savvy group of people that we have. And so we have people making decisions without really, the proper information. And so it's almost like there's a technology and digital literacy crisis in our elected officials. And how do we deal with that?
Mm-hmm. What about the state of Maine has sort of made headlines in the passing of this, of its internet privacy
yep.
law.
Mm-hmm. Act to That's protect right. online privacy.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the tech companies are saying, well, Maine can't possibly, this is not Maine's jurisdiction, but they've gone ahead with it. What do you think of this?
I think it's an excellent idea, mm-hmm. and I applaud the governor and everyone that signed off on it. It is, we spoke about this we're going back now 2 years ago on this show, but under the current administration, the FCC removed the rules. All of us have an internet service provider, whether you're at home and you're using Spectrum or you're on your phone, you're using AT&T or Verizon. Doesn't matter what website you go to, what you're buying, what your email, everything has to go through that one pipeline. Think of it like a water pipe leaving your house. Everything has to go through that pipe. That pipe is owned by the internet service providers. And what the federal government did in 2017 is allow them to basically look in the pipe and collect and mine your information and share and sell it, which now means, so if you go to a Google-empowered site, well, they can get your information and gather it and create advertising. If you go to Facebook, they can get your information. If you go to site X, Y, or Z, they can get, but your internet service provider sees every single thing you do. And so now for them to be able to not only harness that, but then sell it. And the other difference is, which really bothers me, is your internet service provider is somebody that we are paying. We're not paying Facebook. Facebook gives us a free product because we are essentially their product. They make money off of us. But your internet service provider, you're already paying them X dollars a month. And now on top of that, they're going to take your information, some of it potentially your most personal information, and have the ability to sell it. So these safeguards need to be, if the federal government won't protect us there, you know, states have to step up, and states like California and Maine are starting to do that. This will surely be challenged in the courts, but it's an important step because, you know, our privacy is on the line. And real quick, you said before is, you know, I grew up in a time where I started high school without the internet and I ended high school with the internet. And then in the late 90s and 2000, all of a sudden we had Napster. We had this free, open, wild, you know, that was the idea of the internet, to be decentralized. But what we're seeing now is government, whether they're talking about the money or we're talking about privacy, big government and corporation have moved in and are taking over what was supposed to essentially be a free and open world, and it's becoming more confined every day, and we're losing our rights there.
The Maine law, by the way, takes effect July 1st of next year, yeah. And it bars companies from using, selling, or distributing customer data without consent. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the new developments coming out of Apple. We'll talk about iPhones. We'll talk about all kinds of things. And we'll take your questions as well. The number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and Insulation Rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com. Beth's Farm Market of Warren, featuring a selection of seasonal and locally grown fruits, vegetables, and herbs, fresh picked daily. More at bethsfarmmarket.com. And Bar Harbor Pride Festival, presenting drag shows, live music, hiking, and all-ages activities. June 27th through June 30th, barharborpride.com.
In New York, tenant advocates are celebrating a sweeping new law designed to protect renters across the state.
There's the right to make sure repairs are done, or at least being able to have some comfort in making a complaint to, like, buildings and codes and not feeling like you're about to be retaliated against.
Landlords say the law will reduce the supply of affordable housing. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. Thinking about donating your used vehicle to Maine Public? Doing so from now through the end of June is a good time. Not only will it be towed away for free and you could get a possible tax credit, but also our friends at Lee Auto Malls will provide a $500 Lee certificate for use towards the purchase of any new or used vehicle at any Lee Auto Malls location around the state. For complete information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on the banner or click on the events dropdown. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, new innovations in technology. My guests today, three tech experts, Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library, Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology, and Andrew Rosenstein, owner of Techport. We invite you to join the conversation. The number 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Andrew, first to you, some news out of Apple, some developments. Apple says it's going to phase out iTunes in its next operating system and replace it with three different apps, music, TV, and podcasts. How is this going to affect the average iTunes user, if at all?
Well, frankly, I think it will make using iTunes a lot easier because it's really become like just a big bucket of music, podcasts, you know, everything that you have to sort through a lot of this, a lot of your anything you want to listen to. So by splitting it into music, you're going to have a music app that will replace what most of us think of as iTunes, as well as a podcast app, which most of us already have on our phones, and other apps that break down, and iBooks, which we also have on our phones as well. So there, not a whole lot is going to change, except there's going to be a streamlining of, you know, of how we listen to music. So I think the benefit is people with really large music collections, people who use iTunes Match, which is the service that Apple provides to match your collection digitally so you can listen from iCloud. Those kinds of things are going to work a lot better, I think.
So will you have to move what's in iTunes over to these three?
It will. It promises to be a seamless transition. Uh-huh. We'll see. But I'm sure there will be a few bumps here and there. But Catalina, the new operating system that's introduced this fall, is going to have software built in to transition you from your iTunes account to your music account. You'll be using the same library, and hopefully, if all goes well, it will be seamless.
Also, we'll just stay with you because all these things are happening at Apple. The new and expensive, I'm guessing, MacBook Pro 15?
Yes.
Due in the fall. Who is this targeted for, and what's it going to cost, do you think?
Oh, it's going to cost quite a bit. Like, remember when you bought your first car? So what Apple is really working hard at is and I think the last few years they've kind of left the high-end creative market behind. And this is an attempt to catch up and bring those people back with wow technology. I mean, the new MacBook Pro 15-inch has a new kind of graphics processor that is able to handle a lot more video editing possibilities at a higher speed. And a lot of these things, we see sort of a blending of the new Mac Pro and the MacBook Pro. They have a lot of the same kinds of speedy features. Although the MacBook Pro will look similar to what it does now, however, the Mac Pro, the desktop version, can also grate cheese, apparently. Or no, it
works on your golf swing.
It works on your golf swing.
I got to get that.
It looks remarkably like a cheese grater, but it is, another adorable product from
right.
Our friends.
May I say something about Catalina?
Yeah.
Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong. But
are you allowed to talk about Mac stuff?
I don't know. I heard about
it once
or twice.
He's got a special, yeah.
But I just want to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but because I think probably a lot of people in the audience do this, but we often see folks keeping older software alive, old copies of like Photoshop and Adobe or Office and things like that. And I believe that older 32-bit programs are not going to be supported by the new operating system. So for folks out there who are nursing along older software because they don't want to spend the big bucks on the new one, if you do have a compatible machine when that comes out, you may want to be careful on that upgrade because that upgrade may take out some of your old software that you've been hanging on to.
Right. I'd say if you have a machine that's, a 2020 MacBook Pro, I think those are going to be left behind by this and upgrade. And, the most important thing with any upgrade is back up first, do your research. Apple publishes the specs. If you have one of the last machines that is upgradable on the list, probably you shouldn't upgrade. It's not suited for everyone. Just the same as Windows 10 was kind of a disaster for some users.
1-800-399-3566. Susan has an iTunes question. She's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you. My question is that long ago I loaded all my owned music from CDs and files that I had collected myself as a musician and singer into iTunes so that I could access everything remotely from my iPhone or my iPad, wherever I was. And with this change, I will say that in the meantime, with some upgrades, it's been harder and harder for me to find my own information that I already had paid for and owned before I ever met iTunes. But with this upgrade to leaving iTunes behind, will all of that be completely lost?
No, the idea is to not damage your existing iTunes library, but to move you into this new application. But there's probably going to be some problems in sorting out your library. So, it does leave us with a lot of questions about storage. For instance, we're very dependent on applications from Apple like iTunes or soon to be Music, as well as Photos. But we've got to remember those are proprietary applications that suddenly change and something doesn't quite go right. So it is really something to think about that, do we own our own photos? Do we own our own music? Are they just existing in this peculiar database?
Yeah. Mm. Susan, best of luck with that. I guess we'll just have to see how
we
this...
We just have to see what happens. It's going to be a shakedown.
Yeah. Let's move to iPhones. It's like Q-tips sometimes. to smartphones. The Pixel 3a is Google's phone. Someone was noting, you know, that it's $400 instead of $1,000. But let's start with sort of pricing and what's going on.
When you say $1,000, you mean the cheap iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the bargain price.
So, I mean, what's happening in the market, do you think now? I'll open this to anyone. Are customers giving indicators about what they're willing to pay for a certain level of stuff? And are the phone makers getting it, or are they driving the bus? It's a big question.
I sometimes look at, especially Apple products, as you're not even necessarily buying the product, you're buying the brand, you're buying the lifestyle, you're buying an ecosystem. You know, if you have an iPad or you have a Mac, then when you go to the store, you're probably not going to buy an Android. You're gonna buy an Apple product. Some folks are just looking for a phone. Some people, I've seen flip phones coming back. You could just just make a phone call with it. That's what you do. So I think some people are just looking for a phone. Some are looking for the brand or the lifestyle. But the big thing is, especially when you get into these $1,200 iPhones, what everyone's done now is you don't pay $1,200. You know, if we had to walk into the store and give them $1,200, I guarantee there would not be nearly as many iPhones walking around. What we do now is we walk in, they hand us a phone, and they give us a $35 bill a month for the next 3 or 4 years. So they break up the pain. They Netflix it for us, basically. You're just paying on a monthly.
It's a phone mortgage.
It's a phone mortgage. Exactly. It's a phone mortgage.
It is the interest free, but
they do it interest free. Yeah, which is nice, but they've herded us into a place where we will spend this type of money. But I think that a lot of it, because of the easier price point and, you know, the cultish lifestyle, especially of Apple products, that's what a lot of folks are buying into, and they made it easy to do. But I think if you walked in with 12 crisp $100 bills, you probably would not, most of us would not as easily pick up that iPhone.
You're leasing a phone, basically, for 2 years, and then, you know, your payments stop, and you go into a new lease.
So you mentioned the flip phone, and I'm not sure whether this is a retro thing or it's like just somebody to talk about or it's smaller. What's the appeal there?
Because some people just want a phone.
Yeah.
I bet they're listening. There are some people out there that don't need a small computer in their pocket 24/7. Some people literally just want a phone, and I'll see this a lot with folks whose children have purchased them things, but you know they've got them the newest highest end iPhone and this and that, and then they come in and they just want help. They just want to make a phone call. You know that. So some people just want to actually have a phone to be a phone. It's funny that we call them an iPhone because it's really an iComputer is what we have in our pocket now.
So they probably would not be interested in the Galaxy Fold, which is this, which has been delayed, but it's this phone that turns into a tablet.
It folds. Yeah, that's supposed to be the new frontier of phones. Like, it literally will fold, and you can open it up and have it bigger. You can fold it. I think they actually launched that product, and they broke. Yeah. So
the screen, it's a folding.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you fold glass, but they're trying to figure it out.
It's like $2,000, I think, also. But anyway, it's an interesting
piece. Well, that's where we draw the line.
Let's go. Let's go to Larry, joins the program. Hi, Larry, calling from Bangor. Welcome.
Hi. It's no question Apple is doing away with 32-bit. I'm keeping one older computer on an older operating system because I very, very much want to keep the Oxford English Dictionary and Visual Thesaurus. And even though I have the password for it, I also want e-reference, but I can't seem to get it to work. And I just thought I'd pass that along. They are definitely doing away with 32-bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are. Larry, thank you for calling. Again, the number is 1-800-399-3566. Lynn writes, I've been using Gmail for over 10 years now, but recently have heard many negative things about Google. What do you recommend for email?
Well, any email you choose should have two-step verification enabled. Gmail is one option. If you don't like Gmail and you have a Mac or a Windows computer even, you can use iCloud Mail, which is Apple's email. There are a couple of different email providers out there, but what I really encourage is that people don't use their Spectrum main.rr email accounts. Those have limitations on them. Sorry, Spectrum. But
What are the limitations?
Well, you know, sometimes they're just not – a lot of these – I guess I shouldn't pick on anyone in particular.
No, you should. Email is horrible.
But yes, but free email, except for Gmail, the email you get for free is generally worth what you pay for it. The security is poor. I still see people who have Earthlink accounts and, you know, in AOL. you know, AOL has
Netscape?
New ownership. Yeah,
Netscape's still out there.
MSN.
You're really putting your email in danger when you use a service that hasn't kept up with security. So there aren't a lot of options out there, but I think that you can do a little research, and as long as something is backed up with two-step verification and secure, you know, that's a good choice.
Yeah. Any
else? Agree? Well, I don't know. Public service announcement. And I don't think Spectrum would be mad at us, because I think back in the day when the cable companies were getting into internet and trying to expand their services, I think the TV guys just threw up email as like, oh, we offer email now. Yeah. I, in my store, probably have more issues by far with main.rr and those type accounts. And I really don't think that they want to be in the email business. They're just in it. So I'm always trying to tell folks, sometimes when people think about changing an email, they start to freak out. Like, I have to find everybody I know and tell them I changed my email. Changing your email is as simple as, A, set up your new email address, Gmail, whatever you want, and then go into your main.rr account or AOL or whatever. In settings, in every email account is mail forwarding. Just like when we move in real life, when you move from Portland to South Portland, you go to the post office and you set up mail forwarding. So anything goes to point A, always gets to point B. You can do that with your email. So set up a new email address, forward your old one to it, and then over time, as you start to use the secondary one, your old one will start to kind of transition out. People will start to use that as more of a direct link.
So you have to keep both on.
Right, you keep them for a couple of months. You can also, Jared, what about setting up a vacation responder so that people get an instant email back when they send you one saying, hey, I've moved, and you can customize that and just sign into webmail for whatever account you have.
But changing your email is not the nightmare that people think it's going to be. And once you come out on the other side with a better product, you're going to be much happier.
1-800-399-3566 to Casco and David with a hotspot question. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you? I just recently disconnected from cable and in place, I have a Fire Stick, Amazon Fire Stick, and a Netgear, I think it's called a Black Knight M1, to get a Wi-Fi signal from a hotspot. And it seems to be working pretty well, but occasionally I get a freeze up or a flickering on any TV show I'm tuning into. And I just wonder if that's some other thing you can add to this situation to...
What are you using for a hotspot?
Yeah.
Like a phone or an actual hotspot device from your carrier?
It's a hotspot device. It's called a Netgear Black Knight M1, I believe.
And who's your carrier? Yeah. Like AT&T or?
AT&T.
Yeah. I think you have everything you can do, especially if you're out in a spot like Casco. You're basically running off of a cell phone signal. It's essentially the network that you're running, and things like video, things with higher bandwidth like video or music are potentially going to be things where you're going to run into kind of buffering,
throttling.
Buffering and throttling and running into speeds. There's not, if that initial speed coming in from that hotspot can't kind of keep up, there's nothing you can do. You know, you could always triple check with the carrier to see if they have another service or an option for you. But with that existing hardware, there's not much you can do to squeeze more out of that.
Well, that's what 5G is, what we were talking about last time. That's where 5G can step in and provide a better signal.
5G is a couple of years away. Maybe it's yeah. I mean, it's happening, it's, but not on a
coming.
Large
and
scale.
Then actually, we never spoke about. But if since the last time we were here, Elon Musk launched those 64 satellites into space that everyone could see with the naked eye for a couple of weeks. But you know, their goal there is to have 10,000 satellites up there broadcasting down. And for a state like Maine, especially the rural issues we talk about with bandwidth, those are the types of solutions that we need to work to really open up some opportunity out there.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Janet, I want to talk about your experience moving into the new house and some of the Nest gadgetry. And also this question of, like, when you move, what do you leave behind for these things? Is it like the refrigerator, you know, or is it
it's a whole new,
like a couch, you know?
Whole new decision-making process.
Okay. All right. We'll get to that, and we'll get to more of your questions. Again, the number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do AARP Maine, working to lower prescription drug costs. Learn more at aarp.org/rx. Black Cow Burgers and Fries, a cocktail bar and soda fountain on Exchange Street in Portland with dine-in or takeout service. BlackCowBurgers.com. And BCM Environmental and Land Law, announcing a merger with Thomas R. Hanna and Associates. More on their Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine practice at NHLandLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mark Vogelsang, President and CEO of Maine Public. On June 30th, this nonprofit service is closing the books on its budget year. Whether or not we meet our very necessary goals will determine what this essential service is able to provide in the months ahead. Thankfully, Maine Public supporters have been very generous this year, and we're very close to the goal. To make your donation and to help strengthen the future of this station, please visit mainepublic.org. Thank you.
And coming up today at 2, World Affairs, the remains of ISIS. While the Islamic State no longer has any territory in the Middle East, its ability to recruit soldiers and engage in violence remains. A discussion about the future of ISIS. That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the latest from the world of technology. Joining me, our favorite tech team, Janet McKinney, Director of Library Development for this Maine State Library, Andrew Rosenstein, owner of Techport, and Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology. Join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. Excuse me, Janet, we mentioned at the top that you had moved into a new house and you had kind of left some of your smart devices, their home devices, back at the old house
right.
And brought some new ones there. So this is a new thing, right? It's like, do I leave the refrigerator or the couch? But in this case, it's technology that that only you have access to.
Right. And so, you know, most of it's linked to your wireless network. And so when you leave, you either bring that stuff with you and the new people have to set it up. But part of it is what kind of instructions do you leave? So we have a smart gauge on our oil tank that tells us how much oil is in there. We left that rather than hire the plumber to come and take it out and put the cap on and then bring it to the new house. We'll buy a new one for the new house. But along with the old standard of leaving, you know, the manual for your oven and the manual for, you know, all the other stuff in your house, now you have to think, what is staying in my house that has an app? And, you know, what do you want to... When you're selling your house, it sounds really cool. You know, there's a smart gauge on the oil tank, and we have like the, you know, Nest CO and smoke alarms, and we have a Nest thermostat and, you know, all this integrated technology. But then the new owners have to download the app, set it up. You know, it's on their wireless network. And so making sure that you've either deactivated the device or you've left it. You know, it's not Janet's smart gauge for her oil tank, but, you know, it's, you know, what's address or something.
What's the conventional wisdom from realtors, for example? Do they say, don't do this because it, you know, it might put potential buyers off? Or do they say, do it because it adds value to the home?
I think it was thought of adding value to the home. And I think it's just, it's another learning curve for people, not only when you're selling, you know, Jared has all these, you know, cool, all his whole house is lit with, you know, light bulbs. And so it's extreme amount of value if he ever moved from his house, but it's also reinvesting in a new house with that because you're unlikely to move into that. So it's just something that we've, you know, was brought to my attention. And at the closing, as we're, you know, giving all this information and say, here's who we've used for plumbing and all this, but then, you know, for the smart gauge, you know, you're going to have to, you know, do this and this to get it working. And, you know, here's where the app is and here's what the app's name is. And so it's just additional information to transfer and just to, you know, bring awareness. I don't know what I would do. I mean, usually sometimes people take their fridges and sometimes they leave them. But if you had bought a fridge with that, you know, like you need to buy milk, which I don't have that kind of technology yet. So it's part of the decision-making process of what you leave, what you take, and knowing that you need to transfer that information and provide that information to the new buyers.
Is this just an ever-expanding realm of you can monitor or tell, you know, program to tell you anything about your house?
I think so. You know, I mean,
well, you just said the fridge soon is not even going to tell you need milk. It's going to directly tell your Whole Foods delivery guy, right. And you're not even going to worry about milk because you're going to get home and the fridge told they showed up, yeah. And there it is. And
if you don't log out of that device, the new tenants in your house are going to end up with the steak dinner.
Right, exactly.
On your bill.
Right. Exactly.
And I'm also wondering if there are cameras involved. You might still be able to see into these, you know. People.
Yeah, I don't even know about, like, the doorbell things. Like, I don't have one. Don't you have one of those doorbells?
Well, some things are hardwired. I have a spotlight, which when you look at it just looks like a regular motion-activated spotlight. But there's a Wink. It's a Wink light. And it has a built-in camera. If I don't want to sell anytime, but if I sold, yeah, I mean, that's hardwired into the house. So you buy the house, you're taking the camera. We'll be sure to log out because that is right. This is an interesting conversation because I haven't really thought this. It is a brand new kind of a brand new world where all of a sudden you, especially in some places, I mean, you can some of these light bulbs can get ridiculous. I mean, you know, you could have back in the day that $50 light bulbs. You're just going to leave those behind, or you're going to take them and. If you do leave them behind, yeah, now you have a whole new learning curve for somebody. But I don't know. I think it's almost a plus. You could sell your home as kind of smart enabled. Yeah. And then good luck to you. Figure it out once you move in.
All right. I have a question from Nelson, and I'm not even sure I understand the question, but maybe you will, and maybe you could provide some help. He says, I have a PCIe2-based computer and have been waiting literally years for PCIe4. To come out. It's finally starting to become available, but now I'm reading PCIe 6. IE 6 is expected to follow PCIe 5 by 2022. Why did it take 4 so long, and do you trust the new schedules for 5 and 6?
Well, I would say if you haven't upgraded from 2, might as well wait till 6.
What is that? I'm sorry.
PCIe is a protocol for faster exchanges.
Okay.
So you have a device that plugs in directly to the board, motherboard,
like a video card, something like that,
or additional memory. So, you know that. So it provides for a speedier delivery of data.
As an umbrella answer, never trust technology schedules.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's hardly ever on time.
Right. We haven't touched on gaming. But I wanted to get to this. We did have a caller who could not stay with us, who had a gaming question. And I'll paraphrase that. And then I want to get to Breath of the Wild, which I'm not
Janet's
idea. Yeah. It's a game, yeah. Highly awaited according to my notes.
Is that a romance book?
I have Breath
Nintendo
of the Wild sometimes.
Switch Zelda. We don't talk about books here.
It's a guide to advanced dentistry.
But Janet, you're sort of I know you're sort of the gaming person, yeah. But is there, I know there are some changes around, what to buy, I guess was the person's question, as I recall, going forward, what console to buy, looking ahead in terms of Because there are, you know, these choices between Xbox and...
Yeah, there's so many different platforms, and, you know, really, we're kind of in a Nintendo Switch and a PlayStation home. You know, there are people that are really wedded to the Xbox. So a lot has to do with what games you want to play and what other people are using in your small little world of gamers. But, you know, right now, so there's a game called No Man's Sky, and it's on PlayStation, but it's also on PCs through Steam. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, part of it is different, but part of it is the same. And so the players kind of communicate between the different platforms. And so it's almost like it doesn't necessarily matter what platform you're playing. It's kind of the games you want to play, but also how much are you going to get into Reddit, or how much are you going to get into Discord to talk to other people about playing the game. I mean, No Man's Sky, the community around it is, you know, insane, you know, and it's, you know, a very specific game. And it's the same thing, you know, I love my Nintendo Switch because it's portable. I can have it hooked up to my TV and watch it big, but then I can travel with the Switch or just play on my lap on the handheld part of it. So for me, that's, you know, that's a big appeal.
And you wanted to talk about Breath of the Wild. So this is a sequel?
Yeah, well, Zelda was, you know, an early Nintendo game and had many, many different iterations. And then Nintendo, a couple of years ago, came out with the Switch. And my kids were generous enough to buy me one, knowing how much I loved Zelda. And it was such a transition for me because I was a side-scroll gamer, and I had to really learn to game in this kind of 3D kind of universe. And, you know, I was proud at, you know, over age 60 to, you know, actually take that on. And, you know, I beat the game, you know, and I'm really excited because they're coming out with a version 2. And, you know, it will give me something to do in my off hours and later on in my retirement. But Breath of the Wild and the whole Zelda character has this kind of whole, you know, mythology around it, and people really embrace it. So, you know, you have Nintendo people, you have PlayStation people, and it's just a matter of what group you belong to.
Yeah.
This is awesome. The librarian in the room is the biggest gamer.
The librarians are gamers and cosplayers.
Good for you.
Yes. You're cool in a way that I am not. Guys, thanks very much. Appreciate it. We're out of time, but it was really interesting. Thanks again.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Janet McKinney, Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library and gaming aficionado, Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of Techport, and Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Ella Boyd answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as helpful links and resources by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.